Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.
Once upon a time, there were so many oysters in the Chesapeake, they could filter the entire volume of the bay, about 19 trillion gallons of water, in about a week's time. Even 200 years after settlers came from England to establish the Maryland colony, there were millions of oysters scattered across the bay's 2,300 square miles. And while Native Americans and settlers made feasts of oysters, it wasn't until the 19th century that oysters became an industry, part of national and international commerce. And with the oyster bonanza came the oyster wars and an oyster navy. That's the part of Maryland and Chesapeake history we'll tell you about today. Once upon a time, people were advised to eat oysters only during a month with an R in it. And those are the months when watermen went out to harvest oysters from Chesapeake waters. The Bay Waterman under sail aboard a skipjack is iconic, a symbol of hard work on the relatively calm waters of what Mencken called the vast protein factory of the Chesapeake Bay. Now, I don't know what sounds you associate with that familiar image, perhaps breeze in the sail, perhaps tonged oysters dropping onto a wooden deck, but I'll bet you did not associate this sound with it. Once upon a time, and for a long time, gunfire and cannon blasts accompanied the Chesapeake oyster harvest. There was an undeclared war over oyster beds that went on for years, and it was bloody.
The competition between the local watermen and the New England dredge boats was fierce. There was a lot of money to be made on the Chesapeake Bay harvesting oysters.
Greg Bartles is a historian for the Maryland Natural Resources Police and the keeper of the cannon, that is, the cannon used by the Maryland Oyster Police.
So their job was to keep peace and prevent the violence and bloodshed that had been occurring on a regular basis.
The Maryland General Assembly established the Oyster Police because things were getting out of hand on the water. In the 19th century, oystering became big business. The demand was international, and oystermen, packers, and seafood brokers descended on Baltimore to set up operations. One of them, Caleb Maltby, was a New Englander who owned three large oyster boats, and he made a fortune off Chesapeake oysters. See, here's what happened. New York and Connecticut watermen had used a device called a dredge to harvest oysters in Long Island Sound, and they left few oysters for reproduction there. At the same time, New England dredge boats depleted the oyster beds off Cape Cod, so that's why they sailed south. But people around the Chesapeake were not happy to see them. In his History of the Oyster Wars, Jack Wenderston writes, "Northerners and their dredge boats were not welcomed on the bay. Marylanders protested against the plundering Yankee drudgers." Here's Greg Bartles.
The local watermen used primitive methods to harvest oysters and had a limited market. But when the New England dredge boats arrived in the early 1800s, about 1820, they had large sailboats and they would use the wind power to drag a dredge, a metal combination chain and rope basket that would scrape across the bottom and scoop up oysters much more efficiently than the traditional hand tongs the locals were using. They were imposing quite a bit of competition with the local watermen, and the local watermen saw that as a threat to their livelihood. In response to the local watermen's concerns, the General Assembly did outlaw dredge boats and outlawed the export of oysters except by Maryland residents. But the laws weren't very effective simply because there was no police force out there to enforce them. The local watermen felt they had to take the law into their own hands. So there were conflicts, gunfire, murders, pretty much mayhem on the bay as these local watermen competed with the New England dredge boats.
So the Maryland watermen would actually shoot at these New Englanders?
Yes, they would form posses and go after these dredge boats that they saw taking their future livelihood.
And does the record indicate there were deaths from that?
Many, many deaths. The newspaper accounts of the day always have articles, especially all around the tributaries of the bay and the bay proper, of bodies that were found and victims of this violence. There were some accounts where the local sheriff would put a posse together and try to apprehend where there were a lot of really egregious violations, where a large number of dredge boats could pretty much strip oyster bars clean in a few days, And the locals, you know, were very upset about that. So there would be some gun battles and some attempts to keep these foreigners, as they were called, outside of their local waters.
And the demand for oysters was great at this time, right? It was growing.
Well, they were very popular in the New England states, and the New England states had pretty much exhausted their supply, so these dredge boats came to Maryland to take the Chesapeake Bay oysters and sail up to the New England states and market them.
To give you an idea how big this became, there were soon some 60 packing houses in Baltimore. Over on the Eastern Shore, in Crisfield, there were as many as 600 boats at a time. Oyster fever spread across the land. As Wennerstern notes in his history, the establishment of the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad made shipments of large quantities of oysters possible, and by 1860, the B&O carried more than 3 million pounds of oysters west of Baltimore. But there was trouble on the water. Men were killing each other over oysters.
In 1868, in response to a perceived and real need of a law enforcement unit to enforce all these new laws that were passed, the General Assembly created the State Oyster Police Force. And initially, it was just a commander and some of his hired crew that manned either a steam-powered sidewheel steamer or a couple of sailboats. Eventually, over the years, it grew into more and more vessels and more personnel.
Was there an admiral of this Navy?
Well, he was called the commander. His name was Hunter Davidson. He was a Naval Academy graduate, a Civil War Confederate naval veteran. In fact, he fought on the CSS Virginia, otherwise known as the Merrimack, at the Battle of the Ironclads. And the General Assembly appointed him as our first commander in 1868.
Their assignment was to run the New Englanders out or just to try to stop or prevent bloodshed?
Well, by then, in 1865, they had passed laws that allowed the dredge boats to operate, but they were limited to the deep waters where the oysters would have been out of reach of the hand tongs. And there were also other issues regarding the transport of oysters and the sale of oysters. And so their job was to both enforce those laws and keep peace and prevent the violence and bloodshed that had been occurring on a regular basis.
And what do you know about that? What did they actually do? Did they have to arrest people? Did they ram boats or anything like that?
Well, there were some pretty violent encounters. It seemed that the rule of thumb was if the oystermen were working in an area where they weren't supposed to be and they saw a police boat approaching, their first thought was to reach for their rifles. So there were regular gun battles between the police and the so-called oyster pirates of the Chesapeake Bay. If they were apprehended, it involved skilled sailing, depending on the wind and how much of a cargo the violator had, which would limit his mobility. Eventually, if they were apprehended, they were taken before the local judge and paid fines, primarily just for the violation of the oyster laws. I find it really interesting that today, if police officer stops someone and a gunfight ensues, well, that's the primary violation we're going to deal
right.
with is the gunfight. But the news accounts of the day don't seem to reflect that there was any accountability for picking up your gun and shooting at the police when they tried to apprehend you for stealing oysters. Hunter Davidson, being a Civil War veteran, realized that we would need some pretty significant firepower. So he asked the Board of Oyster Police Commissioners to approve the purchase of a 12-pound Dahlgren light boat howitzer, 12-pounder, meaning that the projectile, if cast of iron, would have weighed 12 pounds. And that was acquired in September of 1868. Davidson was very unpopular with the oystermen who wanted to do as they had always done and take oysters whenever and wherever they chose. On one occasion, some of these oystermen plotted to assassinate him. So while his vessel was at anchorage at night in a harbor, a couple of the oystermen rowed over to the vessel, snuck on board, knocked out the watchman, and attempted to enter Hunter Davidson's cabin. But the door was locked, and the noise awakened Hunter, and he reached for his Colt revolver, fired a couple of shots through the door, which sent the watermen scurrying over the side and attempting to get away, but he was able to apprehend them and arrest them.
People were really greedy and hungry for these oysters. And it sounds like the dredge boats went into rivers where they didn't belong.
Especially in bad weather, and with the wind howling and storms, it was a lot more comfortable to be in the calmer waters of the tributaries of the bay than it would have been to be in the bay proper. And more importantly, that's where the oysters were, in the more shallow waters. So they were there for the taking, and they didn't want government to tell them they couldn't take them, so they just went where they pleased as they pleased and dealt with whatever resistance they encountered, whether it be the local watermen or the police.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. From housing and education to healthcare and employment, they will help you fight to make the biggest difference in your community. Join the fight at uwcm.org/fight.
So there's like three things going on here. Preventing bloodshed, trying to prevent further violence between the watermen and the New Englanders, conserving a resource, and also a provincial approach, meaning we want Marylanders to have this business. We don't want you guys here, but we will allow you to have some oysters from the deeper water. But this is really provincial protectionism.
Yes, it was. In fact, it was not just the Maryland in general, but the counties were very protective of their waters. So a Somerset County waterman would consider a Dorchester County waterman to be a foreigner, and he shouldn't be in their water taking.
Would he shoot him?
They have accounts in the papers of the day of gunfights involving another county resident coming into a local county waters and taking oysters, and they ended up in gun battles.
Were any of the Oyster Navy men assaulted, wounded, killed?
There are a few accounts of people getting struck by bullets during some of these gun battles, one in particular during a pretty intense fight where numerous dredge boats had rafted together, I think on the Miles River, and wanted to do battle with the Oyster Patrol boat when it showed up. And there was a major gun battle that ensued, and one of the mates on the boat was struck in the arm. But other than that, not too many accounts of any serious injuries of the police. One in 1893 did get swept overboard accidentally by a sail and drowned.
In his History of the Oyster Wars, Jack Wenderson described what happened during confrontations between police and oyster pirates in the 1880s. On November 8, 1888, the police sloop Eliza Hayward hailed 14 pirate dredges working in the Little Choptank River and fired upon them with its cannon when the vessels failed to respond. The pirate schooners quickly surrounded the Hayward, and 24 riflemen blasted her before the police sloop fled to Oxford. The captain and the crew refused to take the Hayward out again. Oyster dredges had only contempt for the state naval militia. On January 12, 1889, another police boat, the E.B. Groom, accosted the pirates, and a bitter gunfight ensued. The Groom ran out of ammunition and was forced to withdraw. As the police boat sailed away, the dredges announced their victory with blowing horns and Indian war cries. The battle had lasted more than 2 hours, during which time over 1,000 rounds were fired. Later, the Groom's first mate, Charles Cater, reported that bullets had penetrated the police boat's hull, cutting the rigging and perforating the sails. The dredges, he said, had been eager to fight, and seeing how utterly powerless we were to cope with so many boats, each of which appeared to be better armed than our own vessel, we retreated, leaving the dredges in possession of the ground. Police authority on the Little Choptank was rapidly degenerating into a farce. Among those wounded during the battle was James Castus, the hard-fighting black first mate of the Virginia dredge boat T.B. Shaw, and his fellow pirates vowed revenge. Under the cover of darkness, 14 dredges boarded the E.B. Groom at Cambridge and surprised the police. Armed with shotguns, pistols, and axes, the outlaws compelled Captain Charles Frazier and his crew to get the sloop underway. Disarmed and ashamed, the crew members were forced to accompany the pirates back to the main anchorage of the dredging fleet. The Shanghai Oyster Police were put to work, and after several exhausting days were allowed to row home in a small skiff. The E.B. Groom was later found many miles down the bay, stripped of its rigging, and abandoned.
1880s would be the peak of the war. It was also the peak of the harvest in 1885, and 15 million bushels of oysters were harvested from the Chesapeake Bay. Oysters were there for the taking, but they had to have a market. As the market grew with the railroads and other canning techniques, they were shipping them all the way to California. In fact, it was considered, a luxury among the gold diggers out there that they had money to spend, so oysters were a luxury, so they would ship oysters from the Chesapeake Bay all the way to San Francisco.
Gus Rice was a notorious oyster pirate, according to Jack Wenderson's history. In fact, Gus Rice had a band of pirates recruited from the docks of Baltimore and the jail cells of the Eastern Shore. Gus Rice had a bunch of oyster boats, and he and his men regularly raided oyster beds in the Chester River. According to accounts in the Baltimore Sun, there were two kinds of oyster pirates. One that harvested oysters until the Navy showed up. They'd haul up their dredges and flee. The other would stay and fight. They made war with the police. One night, Gus Rice made a costly mistake. It was known as the Corsica incident.
The dredge boats, oyster pirates as they were called in the day, were getting pretty aggressive. At one point on a foggy day, they saw a large vessel approaching and assumed it was a police boat. Well, it wasn't. It was a boat called the Corsica, a passenger ship sailing to Baltimore with women and children on board. And again, they just instinctively reached for their rifles and opened fire. So as the bullets whizzed through the cabin of this passenger ship, luckily no one was killed or seriously injured. But the governor was outraged, so he sent the then commander, I believe his name was Howard, to respond with his patrol boat and bring order to this area where these dredge boats had congregated. As he approached, the dredge boats lashed together in anticipation of a gun battle, and one did in fact occur. The boat was being equipped with the same 12-pound cannon that had been removed at an earlier date, but was then being reinstalled because of this increasing violence that was occurring. So as the cannon was being installed, they were sailing to the Miles River to break up these violators. The cannon, unfortunately, was installed in such a way that when he got within range, he wasn't able to lower it to strike the opposing vessel. So instead, he figured out he had a steam ship with an iron hull, and they were working from wooden dredge boats. So he just rammed into a few of them, sunk a couple, and it's alleged that many of the crewmen were not necessarily working on these dredge boats voluntarily, and the captain didn't trust them with a gun, so he would lock them below deck when they were about to do battle with the oyster police. And so many of these folks probably drowned.
Shanghaied oystermen?
Yes, that was apparently a big thing. A lot of German immigrants came to the country and were looking for work, and these recruiters of sorts would convince them that this was a great career, or in some cases just get them drunk and they would wake up on a dredge boat out in the water and forced to work in pretty horrible conditions.
The police were unable to determine how many dredgers had drowned. Several days later, the McLean was joined by another police steamer, the Governor Thomas, and the two vessels moved southward to the Eastern Bay to confront the pirate dredgers. With their defeat in the Battle of Chester River still fresh in their minds, several dredgers beached their boats and ran away. Afterwards, Captain Howard made a triumphant return to Annapolis and was given a hero's welcome by the state legislature. Gus Rice, meanwhile, escaped capture. It started in 1868. This went on for a while. This Oyster Navy was around for a while.
Well, the Oyster Navy technically is still around today. In fact, the bloodshed over taking oysters in violation of the law occurred all the way up to 1959.
They were still fighting over oysters in 1959?
Well, there were people from Virginia primarily coming into Maryland waters and using unlawful techniques to take oysters. And when they were confronted by the local authorities, in this case the successor to the Oyster Navy, at that time it would have been called the Tidewater Fisheries Enforcement Officers, for whatever reason, drew their guns and started shooting at the violators, and one died.
Baltimore Sun librarian Paul McArdle found a story from the newspaper archive from December 1954. Guns blaze as Potomac Oyster War breaks out again, says the headline, with the subheads, Oyster Wars, an old story, break out whenever months with R's roll around. Thanks to Paul McArdle for his help with this show today. The book I referenced is The Oyster Wars of the Chesapeake Bay by Jack Weniston, published in 1981 by Tidewater. This marks the 150th anniversary of the establishment of the Maryland Oyster Police, the forerunner of the Natural Resources Police. Our guest today, Greg Bartles, is retired from the Natural Resources Police, and he is the agency's historian. More information about all of this can be found in the notes with this podcast. And that's our show for now. Your thoughts are welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. And please review Roughly Speaking on iTunes if you get a chance. We appreciate that. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to the show, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at 6080 Falls Road, located at the intersection of Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. More information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.